Is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Looks like packs of cigarettes will come with imagery of the bad effects of tobacco smoking.
The Supreme Court has declined to hear a challenge to a law requiring cigarette packs and ads include graphic images showing harmful effects of smoking. Warnings will include photos of smoke-damaged lungs and feet blackened by reduced blood flow. Nearly 120 countries have already adopted the warning labels. It isn't clear when they might appear in the U.S. The FDA says it does not plan to enforce new rules until December 2025. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Special Counsel Jack Smith asked a court to dismiss the January 6th and classified documents cases he built against now President-elect Trump. The judge dismissed the January 6th case. A bankruptcy judge in Texas pushed back a hearing to some point in December in Alex Jones's bid to keep InfoWars out of the hands of The Onion. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
A big win for the Packers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports. The Packers beat the 49ers 38-10. Green Bay running back Josh Jacobs rushed for 106 yards on 26 carries, scoring three touchdowns. Head coach Matt LaFleur.
You know that number eight out there? Did you see how many people he made him miss? It was pretty impressive. I think early on that got us going. You know, and we thought we could hit him with some of the downhill stuff.
49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan.
The first half, just the run defense was real disappointing. I thought we got out of gaps a number of times. I thought we had way too many missed tackles. Just them being able to control that clock in the first half was one of the worst ones I've been a part of.
The Packers improved to 8-3. They host the Miami Dolphins this Thursday night at Lambeau Field. Elsewhere in the NFL, the Bears losing to the Vikings in Chicago 30-27 in overtime. The Bears have now lost five in a row. College basketball, the Wisconsin men's team with an 81-75 victory over Pittsburgh to win the Greenbrier Tournament title in Orlando. The Badgers now 7-0. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Todd Almost Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going
yes.
to get yes. them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Almost Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. I want to start off with the idea of government deciding who gets what. The idea of government picking the winners and losers. We hear a lot of this on the right going, government shouldn't be picking winners and losers. And yet, that's what every policy, that's what every piece of legislation, that's what every law aims to do. Picking the winners and the losers. And, you know, sometimes corporate America gets the deregulation they want and workers die, people get sick, the environment gets ruined. Sometimes we don't enforce certain laws because we put people into those positions based on their political ideology who may either enforce things to the letter of the law, I would argue a Democrat at OSHA, or, well, not. I would argue a Republican at OSHA. And we'll soon see. So this idea of picking winners and losers is kind of a big thing. Also, the idea of choice. Republicans love this. Yeah, you have a choice. And it's usually the choice between bad and worse, or worse and, well, even worse. So I look at what Louisiana just did. The Republican-dominated legislature there just passed a tax bill. And what they're doing is they're slashing personal and corporate income tax rates in exchange for raising the statewide sales tax. Now, you go, well, the personal tax, you know, your income tax, The corporate income tax, those are pretty steady. Those are a little progressive. The more money you make, the more money you pay. The idea of the larger your shoulders, the more water you bring back to the cave kind of thing. Now, in Louisiana, they're saying, well, you know, taxes are a mandate, but we're giving people the choice. We're giving people choice. Yeah, like, you know, the food that you need to put on your table and the clothes that you put on your children's back and the things that you buy, you know, those are all, you know, absolute choices. But what they're saying is they're choosing to make their tax code more business friendly. So deciding that business gets more of the rewards, that business is taken care of, and well, workers pick up the tab. This is what happens when you take a more progressive tax code, where the wealthier, the people who do better, pay a little bit more, where corporations pay a little bit more, and the working poor, well, they don't pay as much because they don't make as much. Now, you look at the other side, it's a very regressive tax of a sales tax. You know, the same families are buying the same things. The less money you have in your wallet, the higher your tax percentage of taxes are going to be. And they're okay with this in Louisiana because they claim, you know, all the other southern states, Arkansas, Mississippi, North Carolina, they've already done it. They've reduced their income taxes. They're going this consumption route. And you go, you know, okay, I can see if that's what you wanted to do. One, it's probably one of the worst ways to fund the government because you never know. But two, if there were a way to make it less regressive, you know, maybe have an exemption for the poor, but it doesn't have that here. In fact, what it does is it lets the people who are making more get away with paying less. And that's the point. And look, we're going to see this happen at the federal level. This isn't just Louisiana. This is going to be what the Trump and the Project 2025 and the Republicans are going to do because it's their ideology. It's their belief structure. And what I found interesting in what Louisiana did is they're evidently redirecting some $280 million from a vehicle sales tax. They're going to redirect that from several major infrastructure projects that are desperately needed in Louisiana. And for the next 2 years, that's the money they're going to use to offset the income tax cuts. And again, who are the income tax cuts going to? They're going to upper income people, the people who need it the least, taking away major infrastructure investments from people who honestly probably need it the most. And again, I come back to, we're in this, which side are you on? And I bring up, government decides who gets what. And when the wealthy and powerful control your government, when the wealthy and powerful are the ones paying for, oh, I don't know, presidential transitions, when the wealthy and powerful are the ones who are the head of your Department of Government Efficiency, who wins, who loses? And I argue it's working people who lose every single time. And this latest flat tax idea, this is it. They've lowered a flat tax for corporations who have gotten away with paying even in less in taxes. The wealthy who are you know, making money there, and their argument is, we want people to stay. You know, maybe if you want people to stay, good schools is a start. Louisiana's got some of the worst schools in the country, according to most reports. They're at the bottom of almost every list. Maybe a decent infrastructure. Maybe decent wages for people. Instead of worrying about what the tax code is, worry about the wage structure. But no, we're going to continue on this right-wing ideological fantasy tour of if we give the rich people all the money, some of it may trickle down on the rest of us. And we're going to see it at the federal level because this is what they got. So when the train comes around and this comes up, and it will, because they've already told us, you know, the Trump train is all about tax cuts for the rich, all about deregulation for the powerful. When it comes around, see it coming. Understand how it got here. and then work to make sure that maybe we can stop it. Just kind of a thought. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sarah Burris is going to be here, reporter from Raw Story, to share some thoughts on the stories of the day. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, I was wondering about something during the break. You remember we were talking about the Trump Bibles? You remember the one that's the Bible and then the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, the founding papers, you know, married up with the Bible and kind of a giant screw you to the separation of church and state, only to find out that, you know, the good Christian white nationalists, you know, who believe in America first, you know, had them printed in China. But in Oklahoma, the guy who's in charge of the education department there said, hey, we need like 55,000 of these Bibles to put in our classrooms because every public school evidently now needs the founding documents with the Bible. Founding documents, not enough. Bible, not enough by themselves. They got to be married together. And oh, by the way, you know, lining the pockets of dear leader. That's why I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us, reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com. She is in Oklahoma. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
I'm good. How are things in Oklahoma?
Sad. Very, very sad. The most pathetic thing I could think of is that you have a superintendent for public instruction who leads education in the state, which is one of the lowest five in the country for education. And his top priority is buying Trump Bibles to put in classrooms.
And not just,
it's like, this is what you're going to do to somehow make education better in the state of Oklahoma.
And the thing for me is, you know, when you talk to people, especially Republicans, talk about being fiscally responsible, the Trump Bibles, they're not cheap.
No, they're not. And I'm pretty sure there are a bunch of other, you know, like nonprofit organizations that would be happy to hand out their own versions of the Bible without Donald Trump's name on it and without it being something that is overtly political.
Yeah, there was a group that would put them, they would shove them in the drawers of every seedy hotel I've ever stayed in. You could have gone to them.
The Gideons. Yes. And I mean, I thought maybe this was just a ploy from Ryan Walters. Maybe he was trying to get some kind of appointment on Trump's cabinet. And the only way that he could actually afford to do it was to use state money to do it, maybe. If you look at all of the people on his cabinet, they're either really, really wealthy donors to the campaign or they're, you know, people who have been on Fox News. So maybe that was the attempt by Ryan Walters to get in as education secretary, but he missed out. It was Linda McMahon. She has a heck of a lot more money than he does.
Yeah. And look, you know, maybe we turn education into, because I keep going, are we bringing in capital punishment in certain districts? Are we bringing, you know, beating the kids with chairs? Is that going to be the new style of public education?
So in Oklahoma, they actually already did that.
Okay. Are the Bibles in place, though? Because I'm kind of curious, you know, if the Trump check cashed, because I'm sure Trump needs the money for this transition. This stuff's kind of expensive. And this is a nice kickback from state taxpayers of Oklahoma into the Trump coffers, because $60 for a Bible that you could pick up for, you know, $2.50 or $3 at the used bookstore, or have the Gideons give you for free, that's a nice chunk of change.
And that doesn't actually go to transition. That goes directly into Donald Trump's pocket personally. So you have all of these folks who are coming out of the woodwork to pay for money to the transition. Corporations can put money in. Anybody can donate to the transition, yeah. And it's not really tracked and monitored.
How unusual is that?
That's the way it works in transition teams.
So and we can't beat up on him for too much, because everybody does it.
True. Donald Trump, however, whenever he did his transition, he brought in more money than any president in history by like exponentially. I want to say like two or three times more than Obama did in 2008, which is whenever he had a much larger inauguration, because it was his first and everybody was like, oh my God. But Trump brought in something just a ridiculous amount. And Biden, obviously, whenever he had his that came in, it was during COVID. And so they didn't really have any kind of, you know, big, you know, crazy presidential hoedown for the inauguration.
Yes, because, you know, I've been hearing a lot of talk about, you know, the money that's going into Trump. I go, yeah, this is the rich people rewarding someone who's going to make them even richer. So maybe something we as working people might want to pay attention to. And this isn't me being, you know, against Trump. I am on most things, but this is me going, the system is just badly broken. So rich people can continue to buy favor with whoever's in power. And I think there's something wrong with that.
And the laws for this are so, I mean, it's a loophole that you can drive a train through. There's really no rules other than, I think, no foreign governments can come in and try and buy you off. But anybody else can donate. And that's kind of what I feel like our campaign finance laws have become, is that, you know, just as crazy as the good people of the transition teams, they're going to be able to screw us over on campaign finance reform too.
Yeah, or you know, an education director there in your state, you know, buying Bibles, you know, to curry favor. Because look, there was no way you could look at that story and go, yeah, this is a guy who just truly cares about the Constitution being married to the Bible. There's no way you can make an argument for $60 that you would think that that's. I mean, that's the part that gets me. Just an enormous waste of money.
It is. It's such a huge waste of money that. I mean, it's like you said, you can get a Gideon Bible for nothing. I'm sure there are probably an amazing amount of Christian charities who are more than happy to turn over, you know, collections of Bibles that they have, probably even some hymnals.
Not to mention, you can go online and look at it for free.
That's true. You can also download the Bible app on your phone or tablet and access it there. But and you can get different versions as well on the internet on the apps.
From a state where I remember the whole Red for Ed uprising that happened. What was it, 2019? You know, Oklahoma was one of the states that this happened. I remember having a number of teachers on the show, you know, telling me just horrible stories about how poorly they were paid and how they were working second and third jobs. And how I still remember the one woman who said, I would try and get there the day that the doors opened for teachers to come set up their classroom as early as possible. You know, it was almost like camping overnight to get to be the first through the door so that she could get chairs that had all the feet on them so that you didn't have the kind of wiggling. And she said, because it just completely ruins the day and is such a massive distraction. And the fact that that's something that she had to think about, mind blowing to me.
That and the fact that they're begging parents to, you know, give Kleenexes and asking for copy paper. I mean, I talk all the time about one of my best friends from whenever I was growing up, who was one of those people who was made to be a kindergarten teacher. You know, like, she's just so bubbly and full of life and optimism. And I just love her to death. And she was a kindergarten teacher and couldn't live on it. And so she was working part-time as a pharmacy tech at Target and then just said, screw it, went back to school to become a pharmacist. And now she's making, you know, what a living wage would be.
tells you what we think of teachers. You brought up Linda McMahon, potentially our new Secretary of Education. Exactly what qualifications does Ms. McMahon have to run the Department of Ed, especially considering that didn't they want to destroy that department? Isn't that the department they want to do away with and have wanted to do away with for quite some time?
Yes, that is one of my biggest questions, is I thought that you didn't want this to be a thing anymore. Why would you appoint an actual secretary when, you know, you want to get rid of it? McMahon, actually, she has some experience with small businesses, and that's really the extent of her experience, that and wrestling, I suppose. And WWE, right? Like, that's her big business. And, but she was appointed, I think, in Connecticut to be on the Board of Education or something like that. And that is really the extent of her experience on education. Probably the only good thing about McMahon that I would say is that she's very active in the Special Olympics. So one of the scariest things to me about getting rid of the Department of Education is that all of our special ed funding is going to get just completely decimated. And I worry that even laws that we have on the books that mandate that kids who have any kind of mental challenges can still get a legitimate education in the United States. And so I fear that is something that Trump wants to get rid of because he doesn't care, but I think that is something that Linda McMahon does care about. And I don't know the extent to which she's willing to stand in the way, but maybe if we're really lucky, it's all I got.
No, right? I'm glad you brought that up, because look, I have a number of listeners who are concerned that, you know, the disabled are, you know, they've got targets on their backs. You know, I have a friend, I have a friend who's almost paralyzed by the fact that he believes that they're coming for the disabled. That all of the policies that were put into place to help him survive are going to be eviscerated. And, you know, look, you know, Project 2025, Trump, the Republicans have made no bones about it. They're going to go slashing and burning. And you know, he believes that he's a target. And to have someone, if you're telling me this is where she is, I mean, that's a small bit of hope to hold on to, I guess, maybe.
Maybe the thing is that there's so much more in the disabled community that comes from other departments that I fear would probably be cut, especially whenever you start looking at Veterans Affairs. I'm so terrified that they're going to start slashing any kind of funds for homeless veterans or any kind of programs that they have that are actually working or trying to help people, just because it's like, oh, we don't want to pay for this. Like that is sort of the plan of this whole Department of Government Efficiency that Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are going to run together. And I'm terrified because they don't really seem like the kind of people who care so much about those kind of people.
No, absolutely not. And look, you know, as I was trying to talk him off the ledge, you know, I'm like, look, you know, we're all in this together, trying to give him, and he's like, no, we're not all in this together. You know, he said, you know, how do you put it? You know, we're not all in the same boat. We're in the same storm. And he gave me this line, and I've seen it a couple of places, but it's like, you know, some people are on yachts, some people are on good sized ships. He goes, you know, I'm on a surfboard. And he, he believes that, you know, the tidal wave that's coming is going to wash him away. And it's this kind of, you know, as you said, maybe one person's going to be okay. Just like the Department of Labor, the woman who he is nominated to be Secretary of Labor is not horrible. She's actually hopefully not going to be bad, but the entire rest of the storm, that's the problem.
That is the best way I've ever heard anybody describe it. And I think that's perfect, because there are two, you know, it's not just the surfboard people. There are people who are like, you know, Rose from Titanic on the door and holding on to somebody who's frozen in the water. Like that's where I feel like a lot of people are too.
So, you know, because I'm trying to talk some people down who are, you know, it's the end of humanity. And I've got, you know, people who believe it's the end of democracy and all of this stuff. You know, what, you know, as you're looking at the world, you know, how do you stay off the ledge?
I know that's really been something that's been hard for me because I really try to be the optimistic person for everyone. And I'm sort of vacillating between this idea of we have to fight. We have to keep trying to help people and trying to save the world. And then the other part of me is just like, you know, let it burn. This is what you wanted. So that's sort of the place where I go back and forth between. And I really, really want to hold on to that piece of optimism in myself. And I just keep thinking I could be on an island somewhere else.
Look, I asked the question last week on the show, are we a country that will allow let people to die on the street? And I've said, look, we've crossed a lot of what I thought were red lines in the past already. I don't think we're going to let people die on the street corner. The responses I got from a lot of people are like, nope, we're already there. We're letting people die on street corners. And I don't want to believe we're that country yet.
Yeah, that's the hard thing is that I'm pretty sure we're letting veterans die on street corners now. Probably not necessarily street corners, but in doorways of buildings, of vacated buildings downtown that, you know, collapsed after COVID and never came back. This is the kind of world that we are in if we don't fight and try to preserve everything that we have.
Yeah. No, you brought up Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. I look at Musk's history of slashing and burning, the response of, you know, he cuts deeper than the bone.
Mm-hmm.
That's all fine, well, and good until people are dying and lives are at stake. Are we a country that's going to allow granny to freeze to death in the wintertime because we're going to cut LIHEAP away? Are we a country who's going to take veterans' benefits away because as we're privatizing veterans' care, also there's talk of destroying pensions and how they mm-hmm. calculate disability? There's so many things that are going on that are going to make the working class of this country struggle even more so that the wealthy and the powerful like Doge Boy and Vivek Ramaswamy. I there's part of me goes, is this what wakes us up? Do we have to go through this exercise of pain and suffering or will that not even matter?
That is something that I do wonder about is if, you know, how bad does it have to get before people are just like, okay, I can't anymore. I think if you look at the history of the way that Elon Musk handled Twitter, whenever he took it over, it was just sort of this etch-a-sketch version of corporate ownership, right? Where he just fired everybody. And what you saw is Twitter fall apart, right? Like there were no people to be able to fix the servers and deal with the Nazis that keep bothering people. I mean, it has become this cesspool. And so then he had to start bringing people back in. And I'm wondering, like, is this going to be his solution for government with his, you know, efficiency office? Vivek Ramaswamy, his suggestion was, we're just going to fire everybody whose Social Security starts with an odd number or ends with an odd number. It's like, what if that's a 4-star general? Like, how does that makes absolutely no sense. But that's his solution for trying to get rid of what he said was 75% of the government workforce.
Wow.
And a lot of these are very, very smart people who are the tops of their field who could be making a hell of a lot more in the private sector, but they've decided that they're going to come to government and help our society.
Yeah, but we could have something much better. We could have something much better, Sarah. We could have a loyalist to Donald Trump. We could have someone who has pledged their heart, soul, and their work to the dear leader.
Perhaps like Pete Hegseth or Matt Gaetz, right? We see how that's working out.
Last bit I got to get from you. We've been talking about Elon and Vivek and their Doge Department of Government Efficiency, which isn't actually really a department. There's nothing there, but evidently there's a congressional subcommittee going to be, I guess, headed up by Marjorie Three Names. That's actually going to somehow work. How does that work?
So there's not an official government department that has been created. I'm pretty sure that the way that you do that is via Congress. So Congress and the Senate are going to have to vote to establish a Department of Government Efficiency and allow for some kind of government funding, which that alone cracks me up because that seems really inefficient to me. But hey. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to take over the partner on the congressional side, the partnering committee on the congressional side, which also doesn't exist yet because they would have to vote for it to exist, and they're not going to have a vote because they're going home for the holidays. So it just, it is so ridiculous. And one of my favorite things was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez posted about this and said, you know, when they make up a committee for you to run, it's because you suck at your job and they just want you to get out of the way. And she said, for somebody as young as AOC is, she always talks about, like, I come prepared, I do the reading, and Marge does not. And that's the kind of member of Congress you have. Congratulations, Georgia.
There you go. And we'll see what it brings us. Look, I'm looking forward to see what Elon and Vivek come out with. Because, again, I do believe that the solutions will come out of the suffering that they are going to propose. The targets that they go after, there are going to be some red hats amongst those folks. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But, Sarah, as always, I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Everybody have an awesome Thanksgiving.
You as well, our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'll take a quick break. Right back.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Clearing tonight, a low of 22. Sunny, 33 for tomorrow. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, a low of 24. Wednesday, probably the nicest day of the week. Partly sunny, highs near 38. 31 with snow for Thanksgiving. For Friday, partly sunny, 24.
Right now, it's 32.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I've gotten a bunch of emails from people asking about, you know, when Trump took office in 16, there was a pretty big resistance to what he was going to do. There were protests. There were a bunch of things that went on. And it, you know, the 16 election did birth a resistance movement. That hasn't really happened this time around. Because I think people realize he won the election. To the victor goes the spoils on a certain level. And you're watching his nominees. You're watching what kind of government he's going to have. Trust me, there will be people to protest when there's a reason to protest. Just kind of my thought, and here to share some thoughts on where we are, where we're going, and what the how the transition's going. I've asked my good friend Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob's a former Ohio congressman and political analyst, one of the smartest guys in the game that I know. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So before we start, what happened to your face? Did somebody slap you?
I told somebody the other day, you know, I have a sponsor in recovery. I said, you should see him. What he looks like now, you know, with the fist fight argument. Basal cell carcinoma, just a public service here on the Rick Smith Show, you know, use sunscreen on the kids and yourself and get checkups. I thought this was eczema a few years back. This is my fifth one. And I'm old. When I was a kid, Rick, you know, you went out and you put on, I think my sister mixed iodine with baby oil, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And that's what you put on.
No, I mean, the stuff that we used, the suntan lotion, was nothing but oil that to help get more sun and to help crisp you up a little bit more. Lather on the Crisco. There's a generation, my generation, we've got that to look forward to. So I saw that. I'm going, you know, it's either that or Bob's getting his butt whipped.
Yeah. So if you think you have a little eczema spot, which I did for about 2 or 3 years, go check it out. Yeah. It may not be.
There you go. So what do you make of this? I mean, you know, like I said, 2016, there was a resistance movement. People were, you know, outraged. They were in the streets. This time, not so much because, look, the election went the way it did. Trump is the winner. You know, the policies, I'm sure they will be fighting over. But in this moment, is there something to be upset about?
Now, you know, your observations are absolutely correct. Something's going to come later on. But a couple of things happened. First of all, he swept, you know, the swing states. He took the popular vote, which is the first time since 1988 that a Republican's been able to do that. And I don't think that made the opponents of Trump say, oh, okay, that's it. But I think it dampened things a little bit in the sense that the people within the Democratic Party, and when I say the people within it, you have different groups. You've got, you know, moderates, you have progressives, you had the progressives who were, you know, supporting Palestinians. You had these different components there. And I think right now those groups are trying to decide which way the Democratic Party goes.
Yeah. Oh, they're all blaming each other is what they're doing right now. They're all eating each other. And that's what siloed, that's what a siloed party does. I mean, that's what a factioned party does. Right. Because the Democratic coalition is a large tent with a lot of lot of factions and a lot of special interest groups who, you know, sadly have in certain arenas been able to be pitted against each other. And I think this election did a lot of that.
Right. And so what it ends up is those groups, I think, are not focusing on Donald Trump today, but focusing on where they want to be in the future with the Democratic Party.
Yeah. No, it'll be interesting to see where this goes and what their messaging is. But, you know, I'm looking at the process thus far, and, you know, I've had a number of people reach out and go, you know, Trump hasn't sounded as crazy as he sounded on the campaign trail. Am I afraid that he's learned his lesson and won't be as combative? Is this just kind of a, the quiet before the storm? You know, what's your take on what we're seeing through this transition process?
He's doing something he didn't do last time, and something that most of the presidents in modern times haven't done, which is this rapid-paced cabinet. Sure, Gates came and went, but I think that helps Trump because of the fact that Trump can say to the Republican leaders in the Senate, to Thune and others, okay, look, you took out one of my nominees. You know, do you want to go down the line and do more? So for RFK and Hegseth, other controversial appointments, I think no matter what their background or the, you know, the allegations out there about the sexual misconduct, I think they're going to make it through. Now there'll be people arguing, fighting, and saying things, but I think they're, including RFK Jr., you know, they're going to make it through. And he's done this in such a rapid manner. It surprised me how fast, you know, Gates leaves, boom, Bondi's in there, you know, instantly. So I think Trump hasn't totally geared up yet to have people say, wow, you know, what's he doing? So again, the focus within the Democratic Party is going to be the factions and where the Democratic Party goes from here. Eventually, it will downplay of who cost this election. Harris, Biden, Mrs. Biden. I mean, I've heard it all, as you have too. But from Trump's end, I think it's been a bit quiet.
I've been thinking, you know, they're going to throw out all these names early, get all of the fighting out of the way, and then eventually we'll go back to sleep. Because that seems to be what people... there's like a lull in this moment because I think people are tired. People are exhausted from what was a very long campaign, at least on the Trump side. It's been 3.5 years of Trump being in the news. I think people just kind of want to take a break, and I think that's to his benefit.
I think that's correct. And, you know, I asked people this weekend. I was at my brother-in-law's 80th birthday party. And I was asking, you know, people, because I know them, I can say, hey, what do you think of the appointments? And they're like, okay.
So do you agree with Senator Bill Hagerty from Tennessee that no one really cares who does the background checks, that nobody cares about background checks at all? Because, you know, they're using, instead of using the FBI to do the background checks, they're using a private, you know, private firm to do these. And some would argue that they don't have... well, the kind of information and background to get, and or the due diligence. So I'm curious, do you think people agree with that?
I I just think people are moving on right now at this moment with other things in their lives. You know, and Christmas holidays are coming up, Thanksgiving, New Year's. I think people are just focusing on something else. If this was ever a time to, I'll say, get away with not having background checks by the FBI, but we're doing it with our own private entities, this is probably it for a wide variety of reasons. And you hit the nail on the head. There is a campaign tiredness in this country right now. This is a moment where a few things are coming together to give, frankly, to give Donald Trump a break. Except for Gates, that was, Republicans didn't want him.
Right.
But the rest of the nominees, you know, oh yeah, he did this or he had a non-disclosure, but I'm not seeing this uproar of, you know, you've got to be kidding me, except for Gates.
Right. No, and Gates, gone. I don't know. I can't figure out why Gates would have even been chosen when Bondi should have. You know, look at that pick and you go, yeah, I get that. You know, she's someone who was quoted in the Washington Post back in 23 saying that the prosecutors will be prosecuted, the bad ones. Investigators will be investigated. She's someone who's saying we're going to go after anybody who looked into Trump. That seems to me to be enough to get her the gig over Gates, especially because she didn't come with the baggage that Gates came with.
Yeah, I think that with Gates, I still believe it was a smokescreen type of appointment. Look, Gates was going to be expelled from the House. That's what was going to probably happen. Expelled, not slapped on the wrist, but expelled, right out and out, like Santos. And this gave Gates the way out because he resigned immediately. It took him out of the speaker's hair. You know, he's gone, you know, because he's the one that quote took out McCarthy, so he's gone. But I do think Gates probably thought Trump could get him through the nomination process. I do think that. But look, Gates is not going to fight Trump because there's other things he'll, you know, want out there.
Yeah,
he'll want to land.
No, on. he'll. It's, you know, what's the saying? It's always warmer under the wing. You know. It's better under Trump's wing if you can stay there, sure. than not. But I look at this, and the question I have is, you know, as he's pulling representatives from the Republican ranks, I look at this this Florida Republican, what's his name, Walz. He's going to be the National Security Advisor, I guess, Michael Walz. You know, is it possible that Republicans maybe, I don't know, in a magic way lose the House by all the people he's pulling?
Well, that's another issue too, because so many people have been pulled from the House, and it's going to be a problem. Well, for example, in the appointment now for J.D. Vance's seat in Ohio, there are some Ohio House members that, including Congressman Mike Carey, who used to work for me years back, and normally they would be, and they are in the process of the potential appointment, but there's this silent side of the House saying, don't take any more members. You know, Trump's taken so many members. It's very, very interesting to see the House dynamic, because look, it's a close vote in the House.
Yeah, I'm hoping Sherrod Brown runs again in 26, to be honest with
you. That's interesting. You know, he there's a speculation out there that he will run again, and it would be a different climate, and it would be, you know, the midterm magic, as they call it, for the opposite party.
And look, I think he was a terrific senator, a true working class hero, somebody like Bob Casey, you know, guys that were on the right side of the issues for working people every time without question and usually ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, I've known Sherrod forever, my entire adult political life. And, you know, if anybody could do respectable in this scene, in the scenario of this past election, it was Sherrod Brown. Yeah. You know, he gave it the good fight. And so therefore, he could be considered for the next run for this seat.
I would really, really like to see. Now, I brought up, you know, Trump's pick for National Security Advisor, this Florida Representative Michael Walz, who evidently on Sunday said that he met with Jake Sullivan, which is, you know, President Biden's national security advisor. And the quote that Politico threw out is, Walt said, Jake Sullivan and I have had discussions. We've met. For our adversaries out there that think it's time for opportunity, that they can play one administration off the other, they are wrong. I'm kind of thinking that he's trying to signal something, that maybe nothing's going to change. For all those people out there who thought that, you know, Trump was going to completely undo everything Biden did, this sends an interesting message for me.
Well, it does. You know, I noticed that comment, and I think it does send an interesting message. And I don't think the whole foreign policy deal right now is as clear cut as people think it's going to be. For example, I have friends who said, oh, this is going to be far, far, far worse for the Palestinians in the Israel-Palestinian issue. I'm not so sure. There's so many aspects to Trump cutting deals, people in his administration involved with both sides of these issues, you know, and overseas. There's Trump on the Ukraine, but then again, the new Trump on NATO. So we have to see what's going to happen. Now, climate-wise, I think that's not going to follow with what the Biden administration, you know, had set out. Sure. Climate-wise.
No, I mean, certainly. But, you know, it gets me to this place where, you know, what's the next year going to look like, especially, you know, with what's going on in Israel and Palestine, what's going on in Ukraine. And because I have friends on the left who think that Trump's going to go in there, make a deal, all the Gaza killing is going to stop, and that's okay, that Trump's in the White House because they got that issue that they wanted corrected. Do you see that happening?
Well, the 18 to 34 vote within the Democratic Party, and if you look at the, I'll call it the undervote, people who voted, they were Democrats. They voted in other elections, but they didn't vote for Harris. They right. just maybe didn't vote. And I call, you know, that's the undervote. And if you look at it, I think it's staggering for, you know, the effect of what happened to Kamala Harris. Now, a lot of that is the 18 to 34 progressive Democratic vote. And they felt Biden was not doing enough to help the Palestinians. He was doing whatever Bibi Netanyahu wanted. I think Bibi Netanyahu played Joe Biden like a fiddle is what he did. Now, it's very interesting because technically Trump is going to be closer to Bibi Netanyahu, but there's the son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who received $2 billion off of Mohammed bin Salman. And Israel wants a deal with Saudi Arabia for business. Saudi Arabia wants a deal for Israel to kind of quiet, you know, the Mideast situation down. Yet Saudi wants something done with the Palestinians. So that whole issue, not that Donald Trump would just wake up and say, I'm going to support, you know, Palestinian cause, but a lot of intricacies in all these players may come out to make some kind of deal. Now, also, though, Trump is the type, and you know he's gotten mad at Netanyahu before. If Netanyahu does one thing against what Trump wants, you know how Trump is.
Yeah.
So there's a dynamic there that may indirectly come out to make this quiet down in the Mideast. I don't know yet, but, I mean, on the surface, it's not there. But behind the scenes, it may be.
Yeah, and the one thing that I do feel that I know is that Trump will somehow profit from it. No matter what it is, somehow someone in the Trumposphere is going to have their pockets lined, whether it's Kushner, who's not part of the administration this time around, or someone else, somebody's going to line their pockets.
You know, Kushner will be able to do more business now. He was doing it anyway. And at the aftershock, after Trump lost, he did you know, a considerable amount of business, $2 billion worth. The Saudi Development Fund said, do not give him money. But Mohammed bin Salman gave him money. And so now, you know, Kushner's a free agent. He's not going to be in the White House.
Yeah, we'll see. Last question I've got for you. You know, this January 20th, 2017, I predicted the Trump years were going to be the most corrupt, the most chaotic, the most all of those things. I'm saying this one's probably going to be more corrupt, less chaotic. But I'm curious if you have a prediction where you see things over the coming 4 years.
I've almost quit predicting when it comes to Trump and the elections. But in analyzing it, I don't think it's going to be as chaotic. I don't think anything could be as chaotic as the revolving door. I mean, every week somebody was leaving. Names we've forgotten about, Scaramucci, Kelly. I mean, he was going through people, you know, like Carter goes through pills, as my grandmother used to say. I don't think as much of that will happen because Susie Wiles is in the White House.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to help him considerably.
So not somehow she'll be the one to talk him off the ledge a little bit, where Ivanka could.
Yeah, not that she can, quote, control him, but she seems to have an ability to, that somewhere along the line he listens to her. Having her in there is going to be a big deal because if you don't have the right chief of staff, you're in trouble.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I still think it's going to be by far the most corrupt and less chaotic, which scares me.
Yeah, because that's possible.
I fear the corruption does not get exposed, but we'll see what happens. As always, Bob, I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
Good stuff, our good friend Bob Ney. I want to hear your thoughts. What are you expecting for the coming 4 years? I've got friends who think this is going to be the greatest thing ever. I've got friends who are, the sky's falling. I think we're going to be somewhere in the middle. Want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1947. That was the day that the front page of the Chicago Tribune printed a banner headline, "Newspaper Printers Quit." 1,600 members of the International Typographical Union Local 16 had gone out on strike against six Chicago newspapers. The key reason for the strike was wages. The union also wanted the publishers to agree to hire only union labor. The walkout was part of a wave of printer strikes in the United States and Canada. In all, union members from 43 newspapers from 27 cities went out on strike. Most newspapers were able to keep printing during the walkouts, but many had to reduce the number of editions or make changes in how the paper was produced. According to an article published by the Associated Press, some are using a photo engraving process to circumvent their composing rooms, while others continue to use the normal methods. The Chicago strike wore on for 22 months. The strike also became an important labor struggle after the passage of the Taft-Hartley legislation. The legislation, approved by Congress earlier that year over President Harry Truman's veto, restricted the rights of labor unions, including outlawing the closed shop. Since the typographical unions were some of the oldest trade unions in the country, the strike became an important battleground over how Taft-Hartley would be interpreted. The American Newspaper Publishers Association hoped that Taft-Hartley could be a tool in smashing the strike. The courts sided with the publishers and demanded the union drop their demand for a closed shop. In the end, the union did win a $10 raise, a little more than two-thirds the amount they asked for during the strike. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So we're going to see what the next 4 years has in store for us. And as I said, I think it's going to be one of the most corrupt because we know who Donald Trump is. But I also fear that it's not going to be as chaotic. That they're going to put people into place because the machinery, the Republican machinery, the think tank world, all of the billionaire built infrastructure through Project 2025 and all of that, they will be keeping things moving in the right direction. They will because they know what they want. And they know they've got a guy who will whatever they want, as long as he gets the party. As long as he gets the admiration, as long as you know he's the center of attention. We learned that in the first 4 years. We've learned what you know, and we're going to see how Democrats handle this. You know, as has been said, the resistance isn't there this time yet, and I argue, wait till he does something. you know, wait till the bad policies come, because they're going to. You know, I had someone reach out to me and say, you know, his pick for labor secretary is actually not bad. And look, you know, the reality is she is the best pick we were going to get out of Donald Trump, hands down, by far. And I've given Sean O'Brien, Teamsters president, credit for that. That was his pick. The Teamsters put her out there. Her father was a Teamster. She sponsored the PRO Act. She was a good pick for a bad president. Not the greatest pick, and not going to be someone who I think is going to be out there championing a lot of labor causes, but I don't think she's going to be horribly hostile, which is in direct contrast to what Project 2025 is about. So seeing that, understanding that Project 2025 is the agenda. I know during the campaign, no, Donald Trump didn't want any of that. No, we know who Trump is. We know what the administration wants. We know what the billionaires, we want. We know what the Elon Musks want. We know what the donor and funder class want, and they want compliant, desperate, pliable workers. That's reality. I don't know how long this woman will remain as Secretary of Labor. We saw during Trump's first term, there was a lot of turnover. So we will see how this plays itself out. So for all those people saying, you know, oh, you were wrong, we'll see. Hope I am. And I say this quite frankly, I hope I am wrong. But I do believe what they wrote, what is in that document, I do believe is what they want to do. And as I pointed out, page 591 of their 920-page document is all about ending the joint employer rule. Page 604 is all about ending prevailing wage and project labor agreements for our building trades folks. There are bad things Republicans have wanted to do for years that now they see the opportunity to do. That's not going to change with this nominee. So again, I want the country to do well. I'm not going to be one of those people who go, I hope Donald Trump fails. I hope some of the bad policy fails. I hope whoever is handling him now learns the lesson and does some of the things that we need to get done. Because look, if you're advising Trump, the best thing for his legacy is to continue what Biden has been doing, is to continue the policies. Because look, on January 21st, this is going to be the greatest economy that ever was. You're going to see an about face from the right-wing media telling how great things are. And you're going to see corporate America drop prices just a little bit. Get ready for it. It's going to happen. There's going to be all of this talk about, look what Donald Trump did. But over the long haul, they're going to get fed. Corporate America is going to win because they got their guy. And the question then becomes, which side are you on? Does it benefit working people if corporate America is making a massive amount of profit? Sadly, with a weakened labor movement, the answer has been no over the last 40 years. But we'll see. As I've said a million times, hope I'm wrong. Haven't really been yet. Ultimately, we know what the goals are. And we're going to continue to pay attention to them. And that's why we're so focused on what this administration does policy-wise. Look, all the games and all of the you know, hey, look over here, I don't care about. I care about the policy that they're moving and the people that they're putting into positions of power and what they're going to do to those agencies, how they're going to destroy those agencies. And we should all be looking forward to that. Just my thought. So, again, I don't think there's a reason right now to get out in the streets and protest and do all that. There will be. There will be very soon. So stay at the ready. Just my thoughts. I want to hear yours. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, that's where you hit me. I really want to hear your thoughts on this. And for all the folks who have sent me well wishes for my wife, thank you. Please keep them coming. We do appreciate it, and I do read every email, every card. And I really, from my heart, thank you. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at the Rick Smith Show.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC